copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Welcome, everybody. Since this is about social media, you can leave your phones on. And I have no problem if you're tweeting while we're doing this. So this only makes sense. So I know that's not the rules, but we're going to break the rules a little bit today. Just so you understand the perspective I'm coming from, when the forum asked me to talk about social media, it is not from a pastoral point of view. I am not a teacher in terms of a religious teacher or faith teacher. I'm not a pastor. I'm a businessman from the United States. So the principles would be the same in application of how to use social media, some of the issues around social media, and so forth. So that's the application, or that's the context in which we're going to talk today. Fair enough? Okay, what do you guys want to learn? What do you want to know about?
Everything.
Well, we only have an hour, so that I don't think I can help you with. What do you want to look at?
As I said before, the success.
Okay, so you want to focus on success. So we'll get there in a little bit. If you have the outline, you might as well close it. Because I made some changes to it. Again, I break the rules. However, if you want the entire presentation, if you go to steveloiz.com/ELF2014, you can download this one, the one I gave yesterday, and the one I'm giving tomorrow. So it's all up to date. So that one you might as well just close because I changed it right from the beginning, unfortunately. It's open. You can just download it. It's not the PowerPoint. It's a PDF of the PowerPoint. So you can download it right away.
So it's
SteveLowis, steveloiz.com/ELF2014. 2014.
Yes.
And there's three links right there. You can download them right away as a PDF.
So this is the first trick how the audience goes to your website. So
yes. You got it. That's part of social media, is driving traffic to your website. So I didn't purposely change it. When I sat in my room last night, I thought, I'm going to make some changes to this thing. So we're going to go through these seven steps. And I'm not going to guarantee success at the end of seven steps. But the idea here is to give you some principles around how to look at social media all the way from the beginning of how do you develop a real strategy? What are the things you need to look at? Because social media is that one topic that comes up in every circle, business, faith-based organizations, missions, it doesn't matter. Everybody's trying to figure this thing out. And I'm not going to say I have the exact answer, but I think I have some good points on that where most people don't think about, unfortunately. The other thing is we're not going to wait till the end to ask questions. I will be asking questions of you throughout this. Feel free to ask questions of me. Henrik, you saw me a couple years ago, so you know how it works. I'll pick on you, you'll pick on me, and we'll be friends. So there's a couple of things that we're going to go on, is what we're going to look at today. We're going to start with who is using social media. We'll look at why they're using it, how to target the right people, why it's essential to understand. And then we're going to talk about this thing. It's really a process from awareness to influence. What's the idea behind social media? What are you trying to do with social media?
Get your message out.
Get your message out? Well, to do what? Inform your people of what you're doing. What else do you use social media for?
Discussions, comments.
What's the purpose of all this?
Freemium-based something.
A what?
A freemium-based something, so I can give a little content so they can order something.
But why are you doing it? So you want to do what? You want to influence people.
Two-way communication.
Two-way communication so that you can influence them. You want to influence a decision. You want to influence a buying habit. There's something you want to influence them about. That's the idea behind social media. So that's why I say there's this process from awareness, which most people try to sit at. They don't really understand the journey all the way over to influence, because that's the ideal of where you want to go with social media if you can. It's not simple. It takes time. It's not actually free, because time is money. So we're going to look at seven different steps. So what I call walk before you run, and it's to put this whole thing in the context. Understand where social media was, where it's going to. Understand the basics of what's going on. Then we're going to look at this defining of goals. And when I talk to organizations, businesses or otherwise, and I ask them what their goal of social media is, I'll get all kinds of answers. I'll get all kinds of comments about it. But then when I start asking deeper, I realize that they really don't know what they want to do with it. They think they know what they want to do with it because they want to get more followers. Okay, why? What are you going to do with the followers? So we'll talk a little bit about how do you define your goals so you have something to measure, something to work after. Otherwise, you're going to be doing all this stuff on social media. You'll be tweeting. You'll be doing pictures. You'll be doing everything else. How do you know if there's any value to it? And that's the big question, right? So it's got to be something that's measurable. Then we'll talk about target audience outreach. How do you actually reach out to folks using social media? That's a little bit easier. Using communication tools wisely. Knowing your limits. We have a tendency to jump in with both feet, and we want to do everything all at the same time, and we become jack of all trades and a master of none. That means we're really ineffective in most of the things that we do because we don't focus on something until its completion. Very, very common in social media. Then we'll talk about this bridging the gap. Social media is meant to augment other ways of communication. It's not yet meant to completely replace every other way of communication. So there's a marriage of tools outside of just social media that you want to make sure you don't forget about. And then we'll talk about the kind of the holy grail, if you want to call it, and that's measuring results. How do you know if you're meeting some of those objectives? How do you measure some of those results? And in social media, we know it's not a perfect science, right? But there are some things that you can measure to see if it's starting to make sense, if it's starting to attract followers, if that's what your ultimate goal is. So let's look at this number one thing, this whole idea of walk before you run, put in context about social media. So how has social media changed? Look at it the last 10 years. How has it changed?
Well, from zero.
From zero to where it is now. But what has changed about it? When social media first came out...
Usability.
What do you mean?
It's much easier to post stuff, to do things, to log in, to log out. I mean, it's just
simpler,
user-friendly.
Simpler to use, more user-friendly. What else?
Speed.
What else?
Big companies use it.
Big companies, small companies, individuals, we all use it now.
Plus, a lot more people are on it.
A lot more people are on it, sure. So if you look at those users that are online, 90% of North America is online. In Europe, it's about 80%. And of those that are online, 72% use social media in one form or another. Now, that's a broad term in using social media because that could mean I hit like on Facebook. I'm a user if I do that. Okay, but how else has it changed? Think about it 5 years ago to today. What was it 5 years ago?
It was a lot more words-based, text-based. Now it's a lot more graphics-based, a lot more video
sure.
content. So.
Number one catalog site is YouTube.
Yeah.
Now, of course, Google owns it, so there's a reason for that. But number one catalog site is YouTube. But think about the way in which
phones.
We communicate. What?
Phones.
Phones.
Now we have smartphones.
Yeah.
How many
of you have a smartphone?
How many smartphones?
How many smartphones do you have? I have two. Anyways, communication, when social media first came out or the internet and websites first came out, it was about one-way communication. It was, I was going to tell you something. It's, here's my information, it's yours. And then social media really came about. It was more about one-to-many, and so you and I can have a conversation. But it started off with one-to-many so I can get my message out, and then there's now the platform is so you and I can communicate and contact after that. What's the next evolution of social media?
Many-to-many?
Yes. What else?
Blogging
is?
Well, they added as a side product somewhere, a result of drawing interest of some people who wanted to know more, and then the whole new channel started.
Oh, yeah, all the individual channels, sure. So think about it from this perspective. If I'm considering giving to your cause, let's say you have a church or a missionary group or what have you, and I consider giving to your cause, where am I going to go look about information of your organization? So I'm going to do a search, and I'm going to see what comes up. And invariably, it's probably going to take me to some social media site where people are commenting about you, either good or bad. We have to understand this because this whole idea of Web 3.0 and many-to-many communication also allows the non-user who's not, I'm not selling something or I'm not putting my thoughts out there, but I'm going to check up on you because I want to know what you think about, what you believe in. So this whole idea of social media is getting to the point of privacy almost goes completely away. So we have to be cautious about that. Tomorrow we'll be talking about some of the pitfalls in regards to social media. But in essence, we've gone from Web 1.0 to Web 2.0. It was one-way communication. Now we've got two-way communication, one-to-many, many-to-many coming up, and now people can spy on you, basically. Because there's tools that I can use, sentiment tools, that I can track all the mentions of a specific topic, a specific organization, and I can determine what the sentiment of that organization is. Are people saying positive things, negative things? That same tool can be used in reverse to find out what people are saying about topics, about likes, about dislikes, about thoughts, which we'll get back to here in a second. But that's kind of how it's changed. Now keep going on that. What's considered social media? What isn't these days?
Yes.
Right? Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, LinkedIn,
Instagram,
basically anything, personal networking, business networking, content, influence, blogs we were just talking about. You know, blogs have seen their peak, in my opinion. Blogs are continuing to drop in use around the globe. It's still heavy, though. The percentage of those that are using it is still very heavy, but it has dropped in terms of overall usage across the globe. And then you already mentioned mobile, so we can jump right past that. Who's using it, though? Who's using social media?
Millennials.
Is that it?
No, all the people use Facebook now.
Who doesn't use Facebook?
Grandchildren.
What about grandmothers?
Everybody.
Yeah, it's expanded from just, it was the millennials initially. The audience is much larger than it's ever been before, and it continues to permeate the older generation. Makes me wonder what the IY generation, which is really my daughter's age, my daughter's 20, and we haven't even figured out how that age, that demographic thinks. But, I mean, let's look at it. 72% of all users are now active on social media, those that are online. 18 to 29-year-olds, 89% usage. It drops a little bit for 30 to 49. 50 to 60-year-olds, 65-plus. That 65-plus is the fastest-growing segment online. That's like my wife's mother, who is dangerous on Facebook, but she's on Facebook. There's many stories if you want to ask. She'll tell you a couple of them. Mobile usage is higher than PC usage these days when you look at any study, but I don't know that there's anything out there that's specific to an iPad or anything along those lines, but we all are accessing it from our mobile devices, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or a host of others, if it's what's here, Nasha Klassa, and so forth. So it's growing and it continues to grow. Look at the numbers now. Facebook, 1.6 billion monthly active users. Google Plus, which I'm not sure the success of Google Plus, but they're still at 540 million, which is great. You've seen these statistics, but I'll, just for your reference, Twitter, 170 million users globally, although Poland has one of the lowest usages of Twitter.
Yes.
Why?
Because Polish language needs more words to explain.
It's 140 characters is not enough for the Polish language. You need about 340 for the Polish language. I'm Polish, I can say that. But, I mean, that's one of the true statistics is why it's not being used, because you can't fit enough detail in because the words are so big. And then LinkedIn, 540 million active users as well. It was the fastest growing. In the last 2 months, it has no longer been the fastest growing. They're worried about it, even though they just did their IPO and so forth, but they're actually worried about the longevity of it to a certain extent. Because you can only get so many users. Now how do you actually make money off of it? So anyways. And then, of course, here, there's some things going on here, other networks. Russia's Facebook, VK, 79.4 million users. I don't know if that's the most accurate. If you know another one, Henrik, that's actually from 2012. It's coming down?
Yes.
Are they adapting more of the Facebooks and so forth? Yeah. And then, of course, Poland has Nasza Klasa and so forth. So a lot of stuff out there. And literally, Polish characters too long for 140-character limit. Yeah, look at Alibaba. Okay, when you look at the history, this is important to see because, you know, 1969 is the first dial-up. It was really 1970 when the first email between two computers was delivered. Now, look at that all the way up to 2002. Friendster's basically gone, Wikipedia's still doing good, and so forth. What happened in 2003? What started in 2003? LinkedIn started originally in 2003. They didn't get popular until a number of years after that. But the organization started its model in 2003. Remember MySpace? I don't.
Yeah.
What happened in 2004? What happened right after LinkedIn? 2004. Facebook. What happened in 2005?
YouTube.
What happened in 2006?
Twitter.
Yes. So look at what happened the first 20 some odd years. Now look at the growth of change or the pace of change since 2003. It's going crazy and continues exponentially. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. There's all kinds of other statistics you can add to this. But what you got to understand is it took 25 years to get to a certain point. Now in 10-year blocks and soon in 5-year blocks and 2-year blocks, it's going to change quicker than we've ever seen before. Being able to stay up on what's out there is going to be more critical in the future than it has been in the past. I think we can all agree on that. Yes? Any comments on that? I think it's still questionable what's going to happen with the control over the amount of data that can come through and the content and all of that. Of course, there's been a lot of debate on the U.S. giving up control of what the U.S. has to the globe. I don't know where that's going to go at this point. I mean, I'd hate to even speculate. So let's continue on. This is the part where I think people get confused the most. So let me ask the question again. Why do you use social media? To communicate? Give me more specifics. Why are you using social media?
To promote, to market.
To promote, to market. Continue with that. Get specific.
Influence change.
Influence change.
Raise interest of people in the stuff we do.
Raise interest.
Sell something.
Conversion. What do you mean by conversion?
Where you've got visitors becoming your clients.
So yep.
Visitors
becoming donors and so forth. Let's take a look at it from two perspectives. First of all, what's the purpose? So, and it's different here. So for me, it's a business, right? I'm promoting an organization. But depending on what the purpose is it a cause? Is it an idea? Is it a vision? Is it a belief? Is it an event? Depending on what the purpose is, I'm going to change my strategy a bit. The tools I use and how I use them will be different based on what I'm trying to get out there in the first place. That's step number one. And often people don't take this into consideration and understand that if I'm trying to promote an event, the use of social media is very different than if I'm trying to promote an organization or an idea or a cause or a mission organization or whatever it might be. The way I engage, the tools I use to engage are going to be very different. But this is really where people get tripped up, is that we don't look in deeper to say, what am I really trying to accomplish that I can measure? Because the whole idea of driving influence and so forth, which we'll get to, makes a ton of sense. But how do I know I'm starting to get there? Are there some short-term goals? So getting more followers. What were you going to say?
Getting more comments.
Getting more comments. What else?
Build your database.
Build your database. Contact information. That may be the only thing you're trying to do. What else? What are the short-term goals? Often we think about this as in terms of where I want it to be at 2 years from now. I want to have access to everybody and get my message out to everybody. That's in essence what we're all saying. But what are the short-term goals that I'm trying to get to in the first place?
We also want to know, whom are we actually reaching with the message? I mean, who is actually attracted to this?
So why are you getting to that age of woman, and what are you targeting?
And so traditionally, women are a lot more drawn to that than
right.
men. That's one of the reasons why we're reaching that.
So you point out an exact reason why I bring this up. So if you know what your demographic is interested in, but you're writing about or you're posting comment about something different, in this case, you're putting up comment that's primarily female-based, what do you need to write about or what content do you need to put up there that if you're trying to attract more men?
Hot rods.
Football, but that's exactly one of the examples that I want to give is that we don't know what we're going after and why, but we put a bunch of content up and we don't necessarily attract who we want to attract in the first place. That's the struggle because we don't understand what we're trying to do in the first place. So is it about driving attendance to an event? These are simple things, but they're measurable. Am I trying to get more people to come to an event? Am I trying to increase my followers? Is that what I'm trying to do short term right now? Or am I trying to do something else? Am I trying to drive website traffic? Because followers is very different than website traffic.
Yes.
Follower on Facebook does not equal somebody that comes to your website.
Yes, totally zero.
What's more important? And it's not the same for every organization. For some organizations, because of what they have built on social media, that's more important to them. For others, where they have the website is the core, the database may be housed in their website, whatever it is, all their content is somehow driven through their website, their goal is to drive website traffic. They don't care how many followers they have on Facebook. It's very different based on what you're trying to do, and you got to think about it in these terms. Gather contact information, which I think both of you said, right? Is that what I'm trying to do? So I have to have a call to action to get them to give me that contact information. Because just because somebody hits like, I don't get their contact information necessarily. Now, there are ways, you're just not supposed to use those ways to gather that, but there are ways to do that, but I won't promote that. Is it about sharing information? You just want to get information out there. Or are you trying to do conversions? Now, that's ultimately what most of us want to be able to do. Conversions means I engage with them online, now I can engage with them in some other way that really means something, and I get all that contact information, and I can start to influence them. But what are you trying to do first? And generally, it's a longer-term plan that's backed off. So in 1 year, I want to do 8 things, but what do I want to do in the first 6 months? What's going to be my focus, because it may change how I approach social media, what I post, when I post, what tools I use, how I post, and so forth. Does that make sense? If you don't get this, if you don't understand what you're trying to do, you're just kind of putting information out there and hoping that they'll come. That's not necessarily going to happen. And we see that with the gospel itself. Just because it's there doesn't mean everybody comes. Now we have to go out there and we have to show them the gospel, right? So let's continue going on. Demographics. So, you know, you happen to be getting more females in an age group that you don't need. What are you really trying to go after? Are you going after an age? Are you going after a gender? Why is this important? Can you actually look at this information on people? Can you start segmenting who you're trying to get to based on these things? How do you do it?
Just looking at media, just looking at insights, seeing who's coming.
You can actually segment populations. Some of it's real easy to do. Some of it's a little bit more detailed on all of these things. These are the people I'm trying to go after based on activities, interests. How do you go after somebody based on interests? How do you identify what interests people are talking about?
Well, you write about one thing and you see what is the reaction.
You write about one thing, see what's the reaction. What about the flip side of that?
There's no reaction. Then.
Well, no. What are people writing about? What are people tweeting about? What's the sentiment that's out there on a specific topic, in a specific region, in a specific demographic area? So if I can understand what they're talking about, even if I can't pinpoint the actual individual who's writing it, but I can see what the sentiment is through sentiment monitoring tools, guess what? I now know, within reason, something I should write about because people in the region that I'm looking at are talking about it. Now, if I come with information that's helpful at this point, I now look like the expert, and I can start building that trust. But if I just throw content out that is irrelevant, somebody's going to pick up on it because it will be relevant to somebody else. But you want to be able to target what's going on in your community, whatever the marketplace is that you're going after. And I use marketplace as a business term, but I mean that in your mission field. I mean that wherever you're geographically located. But you can actually look up all those different things based on needs, so forth. So this whole idea of digital communities, once you identify who they are, once you identify what their needs are, then where do they play? So are you getting most interaction on Twitter with them? So use Twitter. Am I getting interaction on something else with them? Use that tool where you did the sentiment marketing to get that information out, or sentiment review to get that information out. That's where you want to go back and use, because that's where they're talking about it. We often want to use what we want to use or what our neighbor used because it worked for them, but we don't really think about, wow, I gathered information on this group from these tools. Maybe I should go back to those tools to actually use them in the first place. And we sometimes forget about that. We'll skip the rest of that. Once, what do we do now? We've identified the audience, we think. We think we know some of the things that they're talking about. At some point, we have to reach out to these people. Now, before we can actually reach out to them, let's think about another challenge that we have across the board here. Okay? So, ages. So we have a demographic issue going on right now. Well, what do I mean by that? When we start looking at segments. So we talked about, maybe before some of you came in, my daughter's an IY generation, right? We have, what are the other generations that we have right now?
Millennials.
What else? Why? So if we go way, way, way back, and let's think about how people communicate, because this kind of points out this disparity between certain generations and others. Now, I had mentioned earlier that the 65 plus is actually growing at the fastest rate, but they're still behind the times, generally speaking. So why is that? Because they communicated differently, right? So if we look at the left side of this chart, we'll talk about what's called the veterans. These are folks that were really World War II. There's not many of them left. They're really not in the workplace. But they, what was their preferred way of communication? In fact, their only way of communication. Me and you sitting here talking. That's what they were used to. So getting online these days is a little more difficult for somebody of that generation. And then, of course, we had my parents, which are the baby boomers, right? Rotary phones. Remember rotary phones? Now, in this age of smartphones, how many of you would be happy sitting here going like this? Just about nobody in this room.
I've seen design digital phone that looks like,
it, but it's got buttons on it.
It doesn't have a square.
Really?
Yeah, just to be different.
So, but there were some commonalities that even my parents preferred to have this one-on-one communication to a certain extent. But then there was a big shift at this point. And where'd the shift come in? That's really our generation, some of us that are sitting here, at least my generation, and that was really the Gen Xers, right? Because we went from really the touch-tone phones, we went all the way over to cell phones. You remember the cell phones in the big bags? It'd carry a strap and it was like a brick. How big are our phones now? Well, they're getting a little bigger. They started off small, but now they're getting actually a little bit bigger. And then if we look at the Gen Ys, I mean, if you don't, text is too slow for Gen Ys. Think about that. Text is, Snapchat, yeah. Email was too slow. Now text is getting too slow. So the things like iMessage, where you can be typing and you can see exactly when the other person is typing. There's a lot of other tools that are like that. Now it's got to be instantaneous. It's no longer about I'll send and hope to wait for a response. They better be looking at me as I'm typing to them because I can see her if they're responding. The way they communicate is very different. Think about the next generation, the IYs, and how they're going to think. The point is, again, this is all changing. What's the other challenge this creates? If you're going to communicate to them on social media, because at this point they're all somewhat on social media, what does that create as far as a challenge?
One, there's too much information. There's a torrent of information. It is just constantly hitting them. So filtering stuff is going to be really hard.
Filtering stuff. What's the other challenge?
They're all 24/7, so there's no, they're actually completely engrossed in that world. Because my goddaughter, I mean, expecting an answer immediately. When I go online, she's online. She's always there, you know, middle of the night, whatever. It's just, you know, it's 24/7. So being able to try to talk about balanced lifestyle, work rest, you know, it's completely different.
I don't think there is a balanced lifestyle with cell phones any longer, with smartphones.
Speaking the same language, hard to get a generational gap if you have the same message as to have different versions of different generations.
So here's where things start getting a little dicey sometimes, is that somebody will say, our demographic, because our population, I want to go after women. Men, whatever it is. But in this case, I want to go after women. So I'm going to create content for women. But let's think about it. You're really trying to go after three different generations to communicate with them. Will one message be of interest to all three generations? Not generally. Your segmentation has to go deeper. That's what's called segmentation. It's not just, I want women. It's, I want women with these particular parameters. Unfortunately, this is what marketers do. So every time my wife goes to the store to buy groceries, she has this little discount cart, right? What do you think they're doing with the discount cart? They're tracking buying habits so they can market specifically to her and the crazy stuff that we eat in our house, which is all very good. But my point is, it's the same thing. We have to segment to see what they want to eat so we can start forwarding that type of message to them. So it's not as simple as here's the message, they're going to buy it because there's women there and it's a woman's topic. You've got to go deeper. It's a different message for each one of these. And again, I still don't know what the IY generation is going to be. I'm just as confused about it as you are. As we keep going down this vein, the second piece to this is understanding, not that they're using tools like Facebook and so forth, but how they're using them. Now think about what I just said. So yes, I'm using Facebook. The question becomes, how am I using it? What do I mean by that? Any sense?
Well, pretty much it depends on the context where you are. Like if people carry the Mac, iPad, and iPhone, I mean, how you use it, it depends on where you are. If you're at home, more comfortable, you use the iPad, you know. And then you have to adjust to different contexts of the person.
So yeah, so that's accessing. But what am I actually, there's generally trends of what I do when I get online. Yes. So there's a company in the United States called Forrester. And Forrester does all these surveys and studies and so forth. And they have what's called the ladder of participation. And it just gives us a sense of how people are segmented, how they actually use it. The percentages change every year. They use the same categories, but they basically break it up into a number of classifications. Creators. I'm always creating new content. I create websites. I create blogs. I create something. It's a different way to approach that type of individual. Critics. I don't really create anything, but man, do I love to comment on your stuff. And it's not always positive, so keep that in mind. Collectors. I like to just bookmark stuff. I like to put it, Pinterest is a good example of collectors. I just pin a bunch of stuff. But you can start to see trends on what's interesting to them based upon what they pin. So organizations more and more are now looking at the pictures that are being pinned. Joiners, they join everything. But they do really nothing. So a lot of those users, so 70% of those, as I said earlier, 72% of those online are supposed to be on social media. What do you think the reality of those that actually use it are?
Very low.
It is. There's a group of us probably sitting in this room that use it heavily, and our kids kind of use it heavily. But really looking at all of the tools of social media, the percentage is actually very low. We're there. I'm a joiner. And then we have spectators. I just watch. You really don't know me.
Stalkers.
Stalkers you can usually track. Watchers are just, they don't join anything, but they're looking at everything. They're a little tougher to track. It can be done. And then there's inactives that I don't do anything. And it used to be much of the older generation. But understanding what people are doing, not only the tools that they use, the sentiments that they talk about, but how they use some of those tools so you can meet them where they are, in ways that you know you're going to get to them. The way they communicate, the tools that they use, and how they use the tools. Because Facebook can be used 1,000 different ways. Does that make sense? Comments on that? Aberdeen does it as well, and I believe Aberdeen's is free. I don't know how they do it. I know I have a better sense of how Forrester does it. But I'm sure there's some open source tools out there about how they're actually using it. All right, so there's a lot of stuff out there, and most of it you could probably find for free. I've gotten used to the Forrester stuff since 2005 or so. Think about the design aspect of websites. And we've seen this a ton now. So it used to be that you would click through. Now if you notice all the new websites, you're scrolling down again, which is how they used to be when it first came on. It was longer, 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 longer. And then it became the submenu, 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 submenu. And people say, I don't want to click anymore. Now we're too lazy to click. I mean, how bad is that? So now I'm just going to scroll down the page. And everything, there's actually there's a term for it, and I don't know the term of that type of website, but that's becoming the most popular and where we have a natural tendency to gravitate to where we never had it before. And then it used to be, if you do use some of the menu bars at the top and you click on them and it gives you separate options, the hover overs, so you don't even have the tabs anymore. Now they're just hover overs, and that's going to continue unless it completely goes away because people are going to keep scrolling.
That's exactly what we tested.
Yep. Yes.
Again, back to
and it doesn't matter the size of the organization. Some of the biggest organizations have now tested that and are going to that type of model. It's more. I even find myself gravitating towards those things. But what you'll see now is a lot of, instead of a tab, you'll see little pluses where you plus and it hit the plus and it opens up. You hit the plus and it opens up and the one before it closes. It's just easier. It's more efficient for the way people think these days. At least that's what they say. But I do find myself getting caught into that. But you're right about the videos. In fact, videos used to be 3 to 5 minutes was really great. Then it was 2 to 3 minutes. Now it's 1 to 3, maybe, and 30 seconds and more. I mean, that 30 seconds to about a minute is really to keep somebody's attention. Now, that's kind of the intro one. If they're interested in your content, they'll go view longer ones. But it's really that first 30 seconds that will either get them interested or say, they'll say bye-bye, one way or the other. So there's two trains of thought on that. Some consumer products companies that are selling a product love it because they seem to be getting a different response. Services doesn't seem to be working so well, at least from any of the studies that we've seen, that you get to the point of seeing so much advertisement. I mean, think of the advertisement you're getting on your Facebook feed now. You're getting it constantly. All across the globe, something is being advertised on your Facebook feed that you didn't have before, and everyone's complaining now. So a service specifically for an individual user, it's not that great, but some of the consumer products companies are actually saying, yeah, this is working pretty good for us. But these are all trended items. Remember that. What's working today, 3 months from now, may not work at all because it's run its course. That's the other challenge with some of this stuff.
You know, does it make sense? Can you make a disciple in 5 episodes, 20 seconds each?
That's an interesting way of looking at it. So like I said, this is from a business perspective. but it's true. I mean, it's interesting how it's changed. Any other comments on that before we get to this using some of these tools wisely?
How often do you review your strategy, you know, what you're doing online and social media?
3 months.
What about design for the website? How often?
Once a year. Is that what you're experiencing too? Henrik's kind of in that business, so I know he's got some of this already played out as well.
Reaching people of different demographics. It could be then that we need to consider different websites.
Not different websites, but different areas of content if you're talking specifically about the website. Because I may come to your website for this type of content. My wife may come to your website for this type of content, understanding that. When you get into multiple websites, it gets really confusing for people. I mean, that used to be the thing, is let's just have all these websites because they're so inexpensive, and we'll have it, you can click back to the home website. That gets crazy, unless it's a completely separate division somewhere, if it's a company. But if you're talking a one mission, but you're going after multiple demographics, it's one website, but with content and understanding who's coming to the website or who you're trying to track, and content in different places, probably presented differently for each of those that you're trying to target, because you're going to post those out in different ways on social media as well to get to them, to drive them to your website. Does that make sense? Is that the same thing you guys are doing?
Well, we try to, yes.
Yeah.
As you said, changing the way you
do. Yeah. Yeah, literally, we look at ours and we look at our clients and our clients look at theirs every 3 months to see what's working, what's not, what's changing, what isn't changing, and so forth. What new technology is coming out? A lot of success in seeing that. Yeah. So organizations look at it two ways. Is the organization about the organization, or is it about the individual? So that's the first, right? So the organization is really about the organization. Now, a founder of an organization is generally very prominent on a website for a period of time, or in all their media for a period of time. But ultimately, that organization is going to hopefully outlive that particular person, right? It goes on. It's perpetual. So many organizations, both mission-based organizations and business organizations, separate the two. There may be some reference, and usually is still a reference to the CEO or the founder or whoever it might be. But in many instances, from a credibility perspective, yes, separate website with a blog, all of that information. However, what's changed is it used to be when you had that second website that the minute you hit the landing page, it was their blog. It was just a mess of comments. Boom, 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 right after the other. That worked for a period of time, and what we have found now is that people like to see an actual website with having to click on the blog or seeing it scroll down at the bottom, not being right in the center and the only thing when they come to that individual's website. So it used to be when you went to, if I have my own website, I have my business website and I have my own website, the minute you landed on my landing page, the primary thing you focused on was my blog. It was front and center. That worked for a period of time. It doesn't work anymore. People have a less tendency to come back to it. If the blog is either one click away or hidden, not hidden, but smaller, maybe scrolling on the bottom right that they can click on and then view each topic, that seems to be more effective today than what it used to be. So even our preferences around blogging has changed. That goes a little bit to your question earlier as well. Does that make sense? So this changes. Tomorrow I'm going to tell you something different because it's going to change. Yeah, the thought leader approach, so that's what basically what we're talking about for an organization, actually works really well if there's relevant content that the thought leader puts out there. But that's the trouble you could potentially run into, that it becomes, it fights against the mission sometimes. Even in large organizations, the same thing happens. All right, so let's talk about this whole methodology of using it. So we know what we want to do. We know who we want to go after. Let's assume that. We've identified some of the tools. We try to go, again, from contact to influence. We don't understand that there's a cycle that gets us to influence. You can't start influencing somebody's buying habits by a tweet. Right? It takes something more than that. Some type of relationship building. So we're going to go, there's basically three steps to this. We're going to go through each of the three steps somewhat briefly so you can see how they all tie together. But when we're looking at anything that we use, the first thing we're trying to do is usually drive awareness. We want people to know about who we are, what it is that we do. That's the first thing we're generally trying to do. That's why you create a website, you create your Facebook page, you create your LinkedIn page, or whatever other social media that's out there. That's generally what we do. Because of awareness, we're not going to talk yet about how we get the word out there, but because of awareness, it generally will drive traffic. So the more people that know about you, whether they agree with you or not, for your business, your mission, whatever, you'll generally drive more traffic, generally speaking. That's the idea. So what's your brand message? This is more about building the initial, what do I look like, feel like, and so forth. What's the message that you're really trying to get out there? Does my logo match my, the simple as that. Does the logo match everything of what I stand for? Am I focusing on search engine optimization and so forth? But does everything that I put out there support the brand? Does it look like my brand of whatever I have, whether it's a mission, a business, and so forth? That's just the basic building block of driving awareness. Make sense? And if I do that, hopefully I'll get some traffic. We'll talk a little bit more about that. But there's five stages of what I call brand awareness. And you got to understand all five of them, because we sometimes never get to the fifth one, and we wonder why, man, I got all this stuff up there, but nobody follows me, nobody does anything with the stuff that I put out there. And really, the first one is brand rejection. They don't know you, they just knock you out. They don't know enough about you, it's not compelling enough, whatever the case is. Brand rejection is what marketers hate. It's the worst thing, and it's happened a number of times. Brand non-recognition. This is the neutral position where we all sit. Nobody knows about us. It's not that they don't like my brand. It's they don't know about me at all. Brand recognition. They start to know me a little bit more. I get a few more followers. And then we get into brand preference. Not only do I get a few more followers, if I'm a product, I might even be a dollar more expensive than the other product, but there's a preference for my brand because of something. And then the best of all, brand loyalty. Give me an example of who's got brand loyalty.
Apple.
Now, that's eroded a little bit the last couple of years in the States. But who cares? They had their ride, right? I mean, think about it. Samsung has it right now, right? If you look at it globally, Samsung has more brand loyalty to a certain extent, but in other categories, Apple's whooping the pants off of everybody, right, to use a U.S. term. But that's what brand loyalty is. Now, it's applied differently in a mission-based organization and so forth. But you kind of go through some of those stages. It doesn't happen overnight. The idea is here to say it's steps. You want to move from one step to the other until you get to some type of brand loyalty where I keep coming back to your site, your social media, I keep commenting and so forth. That's ultimately where we want to be able to go. But that's not the end of it. Just because we have some awareness and we're driving a little bit of traffic, what do I do with it? What do I do with it? I got some people coming to my site. Now what? Or I got some people coming to my Facebook page.
Conversion.
Can you get there yet?
Build a relationship.
I do my best.
Trust.
How do you do it? How do you go right from awareness to conversion?
Try this freemium model that I give them something for free, maybe. The free ebook, free something.
Yeah, and what are you doing when you do that?
Building trust.
You're starting to build that relationship, that trust somehow. Because you can't, it's very difficult to go from awareness to conversion. Some will do it, just naturally. They're going to do it because they're interested in whatever that message is or that product is or what have you. But generally, there's something else going on here, and it's leveraging to that traffic that you're getting, and now you're engaging with me. You're doing something with me to get me to kind of get to a point of trust with you. You might be sending me information around a topic that you know I have an interest in because you saw me talking about it on Twitter or Facebook or what have you, right? You may have answered a question, asked a question. You may have sent me a free something or another like you just suggested. But the whole point of this, what you're doing is driving some kind of engagement with me. Why is that important? Why do I want to drive engagement? Because it goes to the next step. Because if I can do this, somehow, I'm going to be able to go to step number three, which is trust. So if I can go from engagement, so think about where you started, awareness, hopefully build some traffic. When I get that traffic, I want to keep that traffic, right? Because it's one thing to have new users all the time, but if I don't have repeat users, what's that telling me?
You're losing.
I'm losing them. I can maybe go from awareness to traffic, but if I can't go from traffic or engagement, or through engagement to trust, am I really doing what I want to do with social media or the website or anything else that you're talking about? Think about this in steps. More asking questions, starting conversations, be open to criticism and so forth. I'm going to go through that part a little bit quicker. And then the last one, what's the Holy Grail? I guess it's not the appropriate place to use that term, but that's an Americanized term. But what's the Holy Grail in this? I can influence them, whether it's about the mission, whether it's about the gospel, whether it's about my product or my service. But I can't go from step one to step three. I have to go one, two, three in order to get here.
Is there control after influence? Can you control
people? I think it's very difficult in today's day and age to control people because even though we talk about loyalty to get you here, The definition of loyalty today's day and age is not the definition of loyalty of my parents' age. Now think about it. Back then, loyalty was, I stick with you through thick and thin for everything. Do you think we have that kind of loyalty today? You know, I live in Detroit, Michigan. If you know anything about, nobody is, well, there's a few of you from the United States. Well, you know how bad the Detroit Lions are, right? We still got to root for our home team, but that's probably the only example of trust that an influence that I'll go to the mat for. Outside of that, we're finicky consumers on everything. The information we gather, the stuff we buy. So I don't know that you can control. That's why I use the term influence. I can give you a nudge, but you're bigger than me. I don't think I can knock you over. Right? Have you seen this guy next to me? I mean, I look like a twerp. Well, see, I can influence you.
Yeah, so then you will win.
But just so you understand the concept of what I'm trying to say here, you can't go from one all the way down to the last one. You've got to build that loyalty over a period of time. Loyalty to brands builds influence of the brand. That's ultimately what you're trying to do. And by brand, I mean anything. Organization, mission, it doesn't make a difference. If you can get to that last sentence, you've now gotten to where you want to be. But this is a long process that you're not going to do overnight.
How much does it cost?
How much does it cost? Depends on your organization. I have no idea.
Buy loyalty over time.
You can never buy loyalty, real loyalty. You can influence. I don't think you can buy real loyalty.
Can you pay you and do it for us to build loyalty?
No, you can pay others. You don't want to pay me to do it. There are organizations that you could pay to do this that probably do a very, very good job. But most of us, or most organizations, are tight on dollars. You've got to be able to do it yourself. And a lot of this, the majority of this, you can do yourself. Others, there's other tools that are even available here at the forum that build some of this for you. So you don't have to start from scratch.
What do you think about buying likes, friends, followers?
What do likes do for me?
Give you credibility.
Do they?
Well, no.
But will likes drive any of those objectives? Likes is kind of a plus. It does build a little bit of credibility to people that haven't been around social media. Likes builds credibility with 19-year-olds, 18-year-olds. In fact, not even all of them, because I don't even think it builds that with my son, who's 18, right? So I'm not a big fan of I don't think you should ever buy likes. I don't know that you should ever buy followers, because are they the demographic that you're trying to go after in the first place? So what's the point? I mean, please disagree with me if you have a better better idea on that, but I just don't see the value in it because it doesn't help you get to that bottom line.
It helps you at the first one, the awareness.
Say that again?
Awareness. It helps you with the awareness.
It could help you with awareness.
It very good help because you can segment
who's liking and so forth. But again, you've got to, so in the States, the majority of the people that use likes are that 18 to 22. Right? It's not the buyers that actually have money in the United States. I'm thinking from a business perspective. So that 23 to 49 that carries most of the dollars, they don't sit there and do likes in the United States. So it doesn't build awareness, unfortunately, for that segment. So you have, so you're right if it's the segmented audience you want to go after, and every country is going to be different based on where they are in the cycle. So where are you from? So in Hungary, it's probably, you're probably still behind the U.S. and some, most of the Europe is behind the U.S. in the use of some of these tools. Let's just face it, right? So it's probably still good for you like it was when we first started doing it. But unfortunately, it's not driving the same thing today that it did 5 years ago in the United States. You can buy 1,000 likes tomorrow. They're not 1,000 people. It's 1,000 likes. They're fake people. You can buy it anywhere. So that's what I meant when I meant actually buying it. If you're doing pay-per-click marketing, we're not going to get into that today, that's a little different scenario. But ultimately, you don't want just a like, you want a follower as well. So you're along the right path. So if you've got this window now where it actually builds that awareness, use it. As I said, tomorrow I could be telling you something different because it changes it across the globe. Yeah, so you're talking again pay-per-click advertising though, so you only want your message seen to a certain demographic. In fact, you can pay for it on Facebook. So I only want to see this message seen by the people that are 20 to 24, are female, that are in this industry and live in this region. I can get that specific when I talk about pay-per-click advertising, but it costs money, ultimately. Now, you can do that, but so many of us are on a shoestring budget that you're not able to do that. But that's a whole different session on the paper. That's actually a great idea, though. I don't think you should buy fake likes.
Yes, but even we experimented with buying real addresses from the database centers, and it didn't work at all.
The database warehouses, I've seen that issue with, but the Facebook advertising, I've actually seen a lot of success with some LinkedIn pay-per-click. I've actually seen some success with it as well. Twitter is starting to do some of the pay advertising like that, but that's a little different, and that's when you actually have some money to spend on advertising. That is substantially different. I mean, of course, you could pay, so when you do a Google search, you know, you can pay to have your organization come up right at the top, but it's not as powerful as a natural search at the top. But that's a whole different, we're not getting into the website itself. So the other thing that I want to make sure we understand when we're talking about social media is we all have a tendency to tell people what we want them to hear. We're really good at looking like we're listening. So even in a conversation, there's this group of folks that they just kind of look at you and you're talking and they're looking at you and you think they're listening, but all they're doing is waiting for you to be quiet so they can talk. And we do the same thing on social media. It's about what we want to push out because we haven't gone through all the other steps. We forget to listen. Listen first and then continue listening. Be careful because your audience will tell you what they want, what they need, what they're interested in. We have a tendency to want to convince right from the get-go, you should be interested in this. Some will. The vast majority will not. So never forget listening about this. Always listen to your community. The one thing I'm going to say about know your limits. For organizations that are not doing a lot of this right now, you're going to say, hey, I've got to start somewhere. And now I'm going to start using all these tools that are out there. There's nothing wrong when you're at that stage of repackaging information. You can't get in a situation where you're always having to create new information. Because why do I say that? It's going to take you time. It takes effort. So when we say social media is free, most of the tools themselves are free. The reality of it is it takes time. Time takes money or effort. Somebody is doing this work. So there's nothing wrong with taking information that you've written about that you know is interesting to your audience and leveraging it in different ways because you got to know your limits. You can't do everything and be everything to people. Does that make sense? I'll give you an example. So let's say I've got a blog that I did post. Because blogs are still okay, right? I've got a blog about some kind of current event. In a day or two, I'm going to put it on my social media site. So I put it on my website today, whatever the blog is. I've got my own followers on the website. Tomorrow, I'm going to put it on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, whatever the case might be. Then I'm going to start asking questions a week later about it. So I'm still basing it off the same content. But now the people that I've seen that have looked at it, I'm going to start asking questions about it to try to have some kind of dialogue based on the same content, right? Then, but you got to be careful not to overpost. Then in a week and a half, I'm probably going to do a little YouTube video with my computer about that same exact topic, and I'm going to send it out to my social media as well to try to generate some additional information, some additional chatter. My point is, I started off with the exact same content. All I did is leverage that content. You can't do that over and over and over constantly. Yeah, if you started off with a topic that you know some of your community is interested in, you're actually generating more credibility by saying, hey, related to this topic, look at this video. And it gives you another reason to be engaged on social media, but you're on the same topic. And if you're using somebody else's comments that you happen to agree with, there's no work for you to do that. So all I'm saying is leverage some of that longer. It's not just here, I post it, boom, it's done, it's over with. I'll keep the ball rolling, keep it active, because if you don't keep it active, the chances are your followers are not going to catch on and make it active. You've got to start that activity to get going, unless you're Justin Bieber and you have 3 million teenage girls that follow you about absolutely nothing. But anyways, you get my point on this. I'm a big advocate of scheduling. So social media is really good to be consistently inconsistent consistently. Let me say that again. Consistently inconsistent consistently. I want to maintain inconsistency consistently. So I may consistently send stuff out on Tuesdays and Thursdays, but never at the same time. It's consistently inconsistent on those particular days. You don't want people saying, oh, I know at every 1 o'clock on Tuesday, Steve's going to throw something out there. Because what are they going to do? Delete. They don't even want to see the notification that I even posted it. But if it's at different times throughout the day, different times throughout the night, different topics, they have a tendency to look at them actually more because it looks like it's spur-of-the-moment idea versus a scheduled plan. But yet, it's generally scheduled out. Those organizations that do social media really well, it's this topic on this day, this topic on this day, this is going out here. And if you use the right system, you let the system pick when to send it out. If you're using an aggregator to send it out to all of your networks, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, whatever local one that you have, make sure it sends them out to them at different times. Because a lot of them, the default is post to all of your social media outlets at the exact same time. It looks like you used a tool to be able to do that. And sometimes it tells you anyways, but you want to be able to stagger them so it shows more activity over a period of time. So when you're looking at who's got more influence online, it actually shows that you do versus if you put them all out at the exact same time. Your activity scores actually go down when they come out at the same time. So if you use a measurement tool, which I'm going to show you. Actually, let me show you that. Let me flip through this bridge of gap. This is just using social media with traditional things like direct marketing. So if you have a business card, having a QR code on the back of it, you know, now you're mixing the two together. It works really well. Relying on just social media doesn't work very well. Just. If you start mixing it with all other forms of media, you have your Facebook icons everywhere. You have the QR codes that takes them to all of your different websites, whatever it might be, your different social media profiles. But then this last piece, measuring results. How do you know if some of this stuff is working? How do you measure it? Some of you, I'm sure, are measuring it. Readers? Number of comments? I don't know that I even have the best way. I just have a way, and I'll show you those, based on a specific set of tools, right? I don't know that there's one that's all-encompassing, but I like to take data points from different areas and to start to see trends when I start doing this. There's actually 9 of them. I'm going to show you 4. If you want the other 9, let me know. There's actually a white paper on my website. See, I'm driving you to my website. But let's look at the 4 basic things, and then if you want the other 5, I'll let you know. So there's brand awareness is ideally what you want to be able to measure, right? The external measure of the brand awareness is sharing. How do you do this? How do you do brand awareness? This is the most difficult thing to track overall. Have you heard of clout? K-L-O-U-T, Henrik? Okay. Clout, and there's about 6 of these tools that are out there. Clout is... let's call it social media monitoring for brands, regardless of what the brand is. Clout is actually has a set of algorithms that it will use that will look at three different things. True reach, how many people you influence. That means wide. How many people does your message actually get out to? Don't ask me the science behind it. I can't answer it. I've asked the people at Clout the science behind it. They won't answer it. Right? They're not going to tell me how they actually do this. But it tells me when I post something on various social media, so whether it's Facebook, Twitter, how many people in total does it actually get out to? And that could be shares. That could be all kinds of other things. They say it's about 90% of any way somebody could get my information that's not tracked by just by forwards. So the first thing is true reach. The second thing is what they call amplification. How much influence of the actual people? How much can you get them to actually come back to your website or go to some other content that is similar to your website? So it's not just you're driving them to your website. That's easy to track. But it's looking at content that's similar. I have some influence on their buying habit. Let's call it buying habit from this perspective. And then the last one is network impact. How influential your audience is. So the people that are attached to me, how influential are they in sharing that information to their audiences and their audiences? And it goes on for five levels. How they do this, I have no idea. But they basically come back with clout scores. And it's on a scale of 10 to 100. 100 being everybody wants to see everything that you say. Now, I'm nowhere near 100. I'm at about 32, 33. Coca-Cola is at 94. I don't know of anybody in their scale who's 100 today. But it gives you this broad sense across the internet of, do people even know about you based upon the influence that you have? It's not a free service, but it's not expensive. But it does give you some perspective of where you're at. The other thing are basics, right? Website traffic, you know this. Google Analytics, you can use any other analytical tool. How many people come to your website? And this is basic. Visits via social referral. So if I want to know if Twitter's more effective than Facebook and so forth, conversions and assisted conversions, that means they left, they went to social media, they came back. So you can really get a sense of, do I play on Twitter for my audience or do I play on Facebook or some of the other tools? And again, this goes through a couple of others. Loyalty, website visitor loyalty. This is really important. Hopefully this gives you something to think about. If you have any questions, please come see me. Again, steveloiz.com/ELF2014. You can download yesterday's and today's. Tomorrow, you can download tomorrow's if you miss tomorrow's. Thank you.